are listening to Out of the Box with Rosie Tran. If you guys like us, please subscribe on iTunes and Stitcher and leave comments. We need more comments. I'm here today with the editor of disinfo.com and podcast host of Stagnation, Matt Staggs. Matt, how are you doing?
Hey, doing really well. I appreciate you having me on.
I'm really excited to have you. We were a couple minutes late because you said someone was attacking your wife on Facebook. What's going on?
My wife, God help her, decided to have a cheeseburger. And she's okay. One of these women that enjoy posting food to Facebook to share with her small circle of friends. I don't know for a fact, but I feel like, at least through my experience with my own family and my loved ones, I feel like women sometimes have a different relationship with food than men do.
We do. We definitely have a different relationship.
I'm like a catfish. You know, I don't know if you know much about catfish.
I do. I'm from New Orleans.
Oh, yeah. Awesome. So, you know, catfish will eat anything that floats by. They're bottom feeders. And like, yeah, okay, sure. I'll grab it. I'll eat it. You know, I'll probably eat a license plate if they could get big enough. I'm like that. I'm a catfish. My favorite kind of food is free. That is my favorite. So my wife, meanwhile, comes from a different kind of family than I come from. I was raised by, I wouldn't even say wolves, jackals, basically. She was raised by a real family and loves food. And so anyway, she posted this, and this woman who clearly has spent her entire life bathing in nicotine was lambasting my wife about her unhealthy food choices. It's been gone on for days. You know,
Did you get sucked into a Facebook cheeseburger argument, Matt? Is that why you relate to the podcast?
Yeah, I kind of have to admit that I did, and it's not like me, but you know, it's one of the few things that you can really get my goat on is if you start attacking my wife, you know.
Well, that's very, very chivalrous of you. I actually got trapped in a Twitter argument, and I had to disengage because I felt my consciousness level lowering and lowering and lowering.
Oh, yeah, and sometimes, and I've said it before, block is the best answer I can give you occasionally, but in this, instantly, I guess the redneck in me comes out, you know, ain't gonna pat my woman. So anyway,
you ain't going to tell her she can't eat a cheeseburger.
That's right. And I was like, look, you should have seen the cheeseburger I had. I had double what she had, and it's okay, you know.
So what was the attack? Just saying that she was a pig or that she was being totally unhealthy?
Well, you know, you've eaten something very unhealthy there. And then the next day, my wife was like, hey, I had insomnia last night. And this same person
came out. That's the best time to eat a cheeseburger.
Yeah, it was a few days later. But the same person was like, well, it's probably because of that cheeseburger you had. like it's some kind of, you know, sleeper cell.
Heavy food makes you more tired, so that's not true.
Yeah, you know, and again, hey, maybe it's because my wife works like 65 hours a week. You know, maybe that's the reason her sleep cycle is so screwed up. You know, maybe you might want to check your cheeseburger privilege, you know, before you lash into her. And, you know, my comment was, you know, let she who is not eaten the first slice of cake, you know, taking a drag off a cigarette here, they're cast the first stone. You know, it's okay, man. You know, have those treats. And I am a big advocate of exercise in the sense that I think it's physically and spiritually fulfilling and makes you feel better and think better. But I'm not there. I'm going to tell you what works for me. But hey, man, you know, it's a long night. And if you need some, you know, fried potato logs on your pillow, it's okay with me.
So she enjoyed her cheeseburger and she was attacked for it.
She was now. That's what's going on. She had enjoyed her cheeseburger. You know, hey, you know what? Maybe this person has sent her into a anxiety spiral that will have to be cured with another cheeseburger.
She will only be posting celery sticks and carrot sticks from now on.
Well, you know, it's funny because she had hummus last night, you know, and tuna salad. So
I you know what? I have learned to I still get attacked. So, I mean, I still take it personal sometimes, but I've learned to kind of get in my Zen center because there's something about the internet. It's scientifically proven. They've done studies now that people feel they can say whatever the F they want. You know, they're like, I'm on the internet, even though, you know, even if it's someone, you know, I'll leave a Facebook thing and I'll have 20 people leaving comments. And these are people I know leaving nonsense. It's like, people, if you're posting something on the internet, if you're posting something on Twitter and you're adding the person, they can read it. They can see you. It's just as if you went up to someone in the middle of the street and said it to their face.
Oh, ridiculous.
And yet people don't realize this and they're just saying whatever and just trolling on the internet with these negative comments. And it's just silly. So,
Yeah, hang on, Rosie. I'm so sorry, but my television just unmuted itself out of the blue. Can you hang on?
Okay.
Been that kind of day.
I think the universe is trying to tell us that.
Yeah, it's like, it was like beep, beep, motherfucker. but an ad. So
was never meant to be. And you don't have to worry about your dog barking. I have two dogs that are part of the podcast. They co-host and they actually put in their canine 2 cents every 15 to 20 minutes.
You can hear mine probably in the background. He's a puppy. He's in his kennel right now just to keep him from – well, he's had some behavioral issues. He's young, and he's taken to asserting his dominance.
What type of dog is he?
Senior cat. He's just a, you know, a mutt, what I call a custom blend, or a dog, you know, several. He's the Neapolitan ice cream of dogs. I think that he's got some Catahoula and Jack Russell. And
I have a Jack Russell, and she likes to bark. So
he's actually gotten now where he'll be dead in the eyes and hey, I want this bark bark bark. No, there's no ask.
So you're the omega, he's the alpha, that's what I'm hearing.
Yeah, I think so. Between the cheeseburger attacks of my wife and a dog that is clearly has demands and wants them met and isn't willing to negotiate, I'm kind of starting to feel that way.
All right, you're at the bottom of the totem pole in the pack.
In a lot of ways, yeah. So, depending on scraps, like I am as well.
And you're just eating whatever leftovers at the bottom.
That's right. It's a good place, you know.
Well, let's talk about Disinfo. So, you're the editor. How did you get involved with Disinfo.com?
Good question. I actually got involved with Disinfo because way back in another life, I was a science fiction and fantasy book publicist. I had developed a reputation through doing this kind of thing for being the guy you called for extremely difficult books. So I'd have publishing houses and really big ones call me and go, look, I don't know what to do with this book. It's like a horror, drama, literary, science fiction, you know, surrealist novel. And
there's no genre.
Yeah,
it's just like your dog.
it's a custom blend. It's the blob of novels. And so they'd call me, and I'd develop a kind of a PR plan and go forward and kind of market it to people. I had connections with journalists and things. During that time, I had established kind of a reputation that got around, and people would call me. Disinfo called me to deal with Graham Hancock's first novel. Which was Entangled. I asked me to do some publicity on that, and that job turned into a couple of other jobs.
Now, Disinfo is an alternative news website, right?
Right. Yeah.
And you guys are reporting on things that are not in the mainstream, or maybe
we're giving a slant on stuff that's in the mainstream too.
A different slant.
Right.
Yeah.
So yeah, they kind of, you know, I love to write, and I'm I think one of my best abilities as a podcaster and guy online is I'm a curator of weird information. You know, I tweet a lot of stuff, and so I think with that, my knack for writing, they just wanted me to kind of come on board and start doing this. So I get out there and, you know, I make the donuts first thing in the morning. And, God, I better not mention that on Facebook. But I mean it metaphorically, not literally. I get out there and edit stuff and write things and accept submitted material, clean it up as needed, and get on the site. I also write, you know, original material here, moderate comments, which, you know, is a joy. And,
What are some of the nightmare comments you've seen on there since we kind of started off with online attacks?
Yeah, you know, I think we have a pretty good culture of commenters there.
Your website.
Yeah, on Disinfo, but occasionally you'll have just sort of a drive-through commenter come in and try to set up base. And usually the ones I end up really having to watch are the racists. And it's funny, the racists are the ones that seem to have the sort of weird ideological Tourette's. You know, they can't go for more than two comments, and suddenly it's you know, pick a race, the Jews or whatever, and it's just anything. You know, cheese. You can have a post about cheese, and then, you know, it's oh my God, you know who really hates cheese? The Jews, you know. And and those guys, I have to kind of, you know, show them the door, show them the kindness of a
does blocking. That mean delete? Delete,
yeah, and block? I actually what I call it a lot of times is I'll mention on there, I'm banish you to the land of wind and ghosts, which is I think like a Chinese term for hell. I can't remember. I got it from somewhere. So I've had them, and it's funny, these guys will email me and they'll send something calling me a coward, or, you know, you don't tolerate dissenting opinion on your website. And it's like, yeah, when your dissenting opinion is the N word, you know, and And on top of it, you know, I practice front porch diplomacy on there. It's basically, you know, you're from the South, so, you know, sometimes people will gather in on somebody's front porch and talk and shoot the breeze for a little bit, you know, drink a couple of beers. And there's a decorum there. You know, even though you're on my porch, it's kind of semi-public, it's still my house.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's certain things I won't tolerate in my house. I don't know if you've ever had to throw someone out of your house before, but I have. You know, and
I don't know if I've ever had to throw anyone out of my house, but
I threw ramen noodles at somebody, and I don't mean boiled ramen noodles. I mean literally a pack of hardened ramen noodles at a bunch of people that I wanted to leave that were talking about buying crack from a neighbor that I had a million years ago. So, yeah. So I don't
let those people in my house. But
well, I was in college, you know. Okay. So, anyway, so yeah, I send people. But, you know, mostly my commenters do a great job of that. You know,
of
it's like, guess what? Yeah, you're going to drop in and, you know, kind of throw this hateful stuff out. You're going to throw your ramen on disinfo. And there's going to be a lot of really smart motherfuckers there that are prepared to, you know, catch it, cook it, and feed it back to you. So, you know, it works out pretty well.
Well, let's talk about alternative media, because, you know, if you turn on CNN or Fox News, I know people say, oh, well, CNN's more liberal and Fox News is more conservative. They really? Still kind of put out the same, I don't want to say garbage, but it's like, I consider it brainwashing because
yeah, it's commodified garbage.
Because they focus on so many stories that are just nonsense. Maybe there'll be like one or two news stories and then it's, you know, even though it's not an entertainment news channel, you know, you will regularly see entertainment news on there.
Yeah, you're right. And it is the stuff that they go with. And, you know, I can't remember what it was, but they, you know, went with something about Justin Bieber and they cut to him. They cut to him in the middle of a story about an interview with a woman that was talking about a former senator, I believe, talking about reining in NDAA. And they said, oh, we've got breaking news. We have to go to Justin Bieber getting arrested. And yeah, and that was it. They weren't going back. It was Justin Bieber. So yeah, it's a matter of commodification. You know, they've got to sell more ads, and in order to sell more ads, they've got to get more viewers. And you know, there's a lot
but
of people.
See,
that just
I don't think that's necessarily true. I think that there's a corporate mindset out there that people just truly believe, right? So, and it's not true. So there was this idea in the early 2000s that Americans wanted big trucks, big SUVs, and that's what Americans want, and that Americans don't drive small cars. Now, I feel that was mostly, now some Americans do like driving big cars and big trucks, but that's not everyone. As a society, we're very different. You know, America's a pretty diverse country.
Sure.
And so that was just something that was pushed on by, you know, corporate car makers because bigger cars are more expensive, and also the car industry is, you know, in bed with the petroleum companies and stuff like that. But they were saying, no, Americans want big cars. Americans will never drive small cars. Americans will never drive electric cars. And, you know, within a couple of years after Toyota releasing the Prius, it was one of the number one sellers. And now, you know, Fiat is having great success and other small car companies are having great success. And Americans wanted it. They just weren't, it wasn't there. Like the car companies weren't making them. So I think when it comes to some of the media, I think there's this stereotype because these corporate execs are saying, well, people want to hear, you know, this or ratings show that Justin Bieber and blah, blah, blah.
Sure.
But that's not necessarily true, because if that's true, then why is there so much alternative media that is so, you know, being followed right now? Why are people on the internet seeking this information? People want it. It's just not
sure.
out there.
But we live in our own little world, don't we? You and I, we go in different circles. We move in different circles than a lot of people. You know, I used to work in an office and I worked with a lot of people that, this is what they wanted to know about Justin Bieber. you know, and the thing about the internet, and one of the problems is that it tends to reinforce your own viewpoints. And
Google what you want to believe.
And so there it is. I think about the big car thing that actually people did want to drive it, because my town, and admittedly I live in a semi-small southern city, was full of, you know, what I call mom tanks, you know, soccer moms driving.
The Suburbans.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and, you know, these huge street sweeping Suburbans that, you know, you hit anybody and they're instantly dead. and I think the problem was that they wanted to drive them but couldn't afford them anymore when gas went up. And that's why you didn't see as many. Even South Park, a I watched it the other day, and they had a joke about something being hidden of great value in a Hummer dealership. You know, with the guy sitting out there is like, oh, nobody will ever go there. And they're right, which I don't know about you. I found the Hummer thing just really disturbing. You know, it was the middle of the our return to Iraq, and all of a sudden everybody wanted to drive these stupid Hummers, you know, because that was like, you know, the military vehicle. Yeah, it's like getting a T-shirt to a bloodbath, you know, souvenir T-shirt. Hey, you know, I was here at the,
I think those are kind of lower consciousness people, though. And I do think, I know America gets a really bad rap, but, you know, I think that there are a lot of intelligent people in this country, yeah, and they're just not getting the info. And it's kind of like a lot of the news channels are focusing on, you know, lowest common denominator news, and people aren't realizing that they're being brainwashed.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And there's not stupid. Yeah, there's, you know, this country isn't full of stupid people. You know, I completely agree. And I think
there's stupid people, but there's just also intelligent people as well.
Yeah, I think so. And I think people want to be informed. But I think to want to be informed right off, you're going to have to know that you're not being informed, you know, that you're ignorant of certain things, because otherwise you think you know already whatever there is to know.
Another point with some of the alternative news outlets is that there are a lot of crazies online, and there's a lot of weird conspiracy theory websites, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Sure. And so I think a lot of people kind of dismiss alternative media when they see some of these websites that are featuring, you know, God knows what conspiracy theory.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's hard to dig through all that stuff. And you know, I don't even know where to begin. And that's one of the limitations of any kind of media, you know, and especially when you start grouping into categories. You know, when we talk about alternative media, you know, what are we talking about? You know, we've got all kinds of crazy stuff out there, and it, you know, it's not necessarily all credible. And there's a tendency to go to this extreme where it's like, well, I learned CNN and Fox News were lying to me. Now anybody that says something that differs from CNN is telling the God's honest truth. So
that's true. So what are some of the most important issues out there that you're reporting about that you think are not being reported about? I know a lot of alternative media, they talk about bitcoins, they talk about the, you know, NSA spying, other things. And now they're kind of leaking into the mainstream a little bit, but it's more alternative media that has brought about these stories. What do you think are the top few issues that you would say is getting underrepresented in the mainstream that's really important for people to know about?
Well, the NDAA is one of them. And I think the NSA story is being spun really well by corporate interests to seem not nearly as bad as it sounds. You know, that's one. And certainly some of the stuff that's happening with the Keystone XL pipeline. So that's three things right off I can think of. I'll be the first to tell you that I'm not the most politically minded person, in the sense that I realize I'm very ignorant on certain matters. Does that make sense?
What do you mean? So you're reporting on stuff, but you feel like you're not well knowledgeable about it?
I don't necessarily report on these things. I get people in. You know, I think sometimes the clue, the best thing to do is to surround yourself with really smart people.
That's what I do. I always say I always want to be the dumbest person in the room.
That's because, exactly right. You know,
because if you're the smartest person, then you don't have anything to learn.
You need to find a new room. That's absolutely true. So, you know, I do. I get a lot of really smart contributors and writers. And so I try to let
those
guys.
You just leech off of them. That's good.
You know, I think that's a fair criticism. And that's certainly part of the internet culture is that there's so much information, and where it's not all commodified, and we can get into a big discussion theoretically about, you know, whether something should be monetarily compensated versus exposure versus developing someone's career and when it's time to go pro. It's a very complicated issue. I don't leech in as much as far as, you know, when I want to know political stuff, there's a lot of people I turn to. And what I mean by that is that I'm not the biggest expert. You know, I'm not the guy that's going to drag out the talking points. You know, the crew over at Young Turks is good at that. Raw Story, from whom I take a good bit of our material, or at least I feature, you know, some of the material, is good at that. So does that make sense?
Yeah. So you're kind of like the cook, and they're the different ingredients.
Yeah. Or I'm the restaurant owner and I say, okay. these are the chefs, you know, these
That's
guys,
a better metaphor, I guess.
I'm not going to be able to fix you necessarily that cheeseburger that you want, but boy, do I know someone that's great at it. Let me get him in to fix this cheeseburger for you.
You love the cheeseburger metaphors.
Yeah. Cheeseburger metaphor. It's my new jam band. We're going to play with fish.
And fish back to the I know it's a band, but call back to the catfish reference.
That's right. Catfish. Yeah.
Everything's coming
all
full circle.
All feline jam band.
So you also are, I notice I follow you on Twitter and you're always tweeting about martial arts. What's the martial arts connection? You just love martial arts?
It's not so much that I love martial arts as I do love Brazilian jiu-jitsu. And it's something I've been practicing for like 14 months now. And it's changed my life in a lot of major ways.
So tell me about that.
Yeah. You know, I was and it's something I'm still kind of unpacking. But I had a pretty rough childhood in a lot of ways. You know, and it's not boohoo, cry me a river. And as some annoying person recently told me about something, it's not the pain Olympics. Well, it certainly feels that way if you're the one going through it. But, you know, whatever. I had kind of a crazy childhood and felt a lot of insecurity about who I was, where I was coming from, and my role. You know, I was surrounded by I didn't get a lot of familial support. I didn't have a closer relationship with my dad. I had an overprotective mom. And I grew up around a lot of, football people and sports people and, a culture that valued physical activity over, you know, say, intellectual achievement. At least I felt that way. And it was the people that I was growing up around and lived around. I was a little guy. I liked to stay inside and play Atari and play with my Dungeons and Dragons stuff and, you know, that kind of thing. And so I kind of got left out. I didn't feel like there was a place. I developed a very low self-esteem and sense of insecurity about being able to handle myself, especially around, you know, kind of more, you know, tough dudes. And so jiu-jitsu was something I was really terrified of, and I decided to do it. When I turned 40 or got around 40, came on into it, jumped in because I was afraid of people, you know, putting their hands on me. I was afraid of getting close to people, and I was afraid of physical confrontation. So I'd heard a lot about it online and jumped in. It's kind of an alchemical process. You know, it's almost like a crucible, you know, mm-hmm. that getting into the sport, because it's very much a sport that or fighting form that's hard on the ego. There's a very low learning curve.
I like that phrase.
Well, it's a theme in jiu-jitsu, actually. There's a very low learning curve and it takes a long or very steep, I should say, very steep learning curve. And it takes a long, 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 long time to start to even develop some rudimentary skill in it. It's very physical form. It's grappling, basically, with a lot of submissions, arm locks and, you know, chokes and things like that. So and you get pretty much thrown into the deep end almost immediately. So coming in the door, even if you're a very athletic person, it's only going to take you so far. And you start getting tapped out
because
a
lot. Is it more about skill and technique? Is that
yes.
why? Okay.
Strength helps, of course, and general coordination, athleticism help. But at a certain point, technique has to be there. And someone that has a lot of technique can quite often handle their own around a bigger, more athletic person. And it takes a long time to build it. It's in, you know, the belt structure, there's only a handful of belts and, you know, I'm a 4-stripe white belt and there can only be 4 stripes on any belt. And that's after a year and 2 months of really hard training. It got me to deal with a lot of my issues. On top of it, it made me lose weight. I lost like 40 pounds.
That's awesome. Do you have a before and after?
Yeah, I do. I can find it somewhere if you want to see it. So
I just think it's fun when people have those before and afters.
You know, get my cheeseburger if I want one.
Well, I think when you talk about your childhood, I think a lot of people can relate to that. I mean, we kind of, as adults, people don't see that about us. Like, you know, I don't see that about you at all, that you have that, but that past, you know, it's kind of part of our like storybook, right? That no one can see.
Sure.
But we kind of carry it with us. And I think a lot of people have that and they need to kind of shed it because, you know, you're doing all this great stuff with Disinfo, you're doing your own podcast, you're creating all of these amazing things in your life, and you know, letting go of that past baggage is only going to help you do more of that stuff. And but no one can see that except for you, you know what I mean? Because like I have my own baggage that many people wouldn't guess by just looking at me. And sure. I just think that it's really important to find those types of things for you. It's Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. For other people, you know, maybe.
Yeah, it could be either. It's whatever it is.
Yeah, whatever. But I think it's important for personal development for people to really say, hey, I need to do something to change. Because otherwise, you're just going to become the people you hate. You're going to become those people that you grew up with. I'm not saying you in general as Matt. I'm saying people in general. You know?
Sure.
You kind of just turn into that and become complacent and kind of let the, you know, world beat you up metaphorically. But I think that's really great that you found that. How has it helped you? You said it helps you deal with a lot of your issues. What does that mean? Issues with feeling inadequate or smaller, or
feeling inadequate and smaller. That's a good one. You know, when you start to get to a point where you can sweep a big person that's trying their best to. And jiu-jitsu, it's very much like I said, it's full force, and it's up to you to tap. If you get your arm twisted up or get choked out, you can hurt yourself, or you're going to start losing consciousness and you have to tap. So it's not one of those things where you're just popping people and getting a point here and there. It's hard. But the first time you go, okay, well, you know, this person is crushing me, or they have their arm around my throat, and but I'm not panicking. I've been there. I've gotten used to a certain level of discomfort, and further, you know, I'm going to be able to sweep this person onto the ground, or flip them over and climb on top of them, and maybe even, you know, get them in a bad position they won't be able to escape from. That's a powerful feeling, and not in the sense that you want to go out and hurt people. It's just, you know,
for
when
personal,
you know,
safety protection, right, feeling like you can handle yourself.
Right. And when you're walking away from a fight, which thank God I never get in fights. You know, it's a choice. You know, it's a
except
choice.
For internet fights.
Right. And very rarely those, because 9 times out of 10, I'll just block someone. You know, I just don't have time for you. And I've developed a philosophy from being online of I will take your criticism when I know for a fact you are a person that has a vested interest in my happiness and well-being.
Just a valid opinion. You know, I've gotten criticism from people that was like really valid. It wasn't necessarily positive of me, but it was valid. And I said, you know what? Good point. But I mean, when people are just leaving random, you know, I've gotten so many random comments. People say my face looks flat. You know, I'm like, thanks a lot. How can I fix that?
Can I pay for my
plastic surgery?
Well, you know, again, it's like you kind of wonder where these people come from and whether they would say the same thing to your face. And,
well, they wouldn't say the same thing to your face, but they come from your flat face, right? my extremely
flat face.
Maybe
you should have a cheeseburger.
But they will. It's so basically, internet trolling comes from a psychological feeling. People that are feeling very disconnected, they're very unhappy, right? So they project their unhappiness, and everyone does it. You know, even me and you. I actually caught my husband doing it, and I called him out on it, and he was very grateful. He was on the internet. He was watching a YouTube video of some band, and he was just criticizing it and being super negative. And I asked him, I said, you know what, the band isn't that bad. Why are you being so critical? And he was like, well, they suck, and, you know, they don't know how to play guitar and blah, blah, blah. And my husband is a musician. He actually plays the guitar and the drums. And I said, you know what? I feel like you are not happy with where you are with your band, and you are putting that on this YouTube video. And he, you know, was like kind of defensive at first and didn't take into what I was saying. But then like a couple days later, after he sat on it, he's like, you know what? I think you're right. And a lot of people, and he was very grateful. And now he's been playing, you know, quite a bit more and practicing and feeling more fulfilled with his music. But a lot of people do that. There's something. And people will say, you know, no, that's not true. You know, I just hate Taylor Swift. I just hate her. She's so annoying. I just fucking hate her. That's it. It has nothing to do with jealousy. Oh, really? It has nothing to do with jealousy? Why are you projecting so much hate onto a complete stranger?
Rosie, are you a big Taylor Swift fan by any chance? You just hate her. You're just a hater. Yeah. No, I get where you're coming from. And
I'm using it as an example because there's certain people, certain celebrities, you know, I do that all the time. I'll see a comedian that's like getting more than I am, and I'll be like so angry. I'm like, oh my God, why is this person getting it? And what it really has to do with is that person hasn't done anything wrong. They're just pursuing their dreams and they're having success. It's just that I have an insecurity about my career, so I'm putting that on them. You know, because if I was 100% where I wanted to be with my career, they could do whatever the hell they wanted. I wouldn't care.
Right. Yeah, you know what I mean? I get what you're saying. And I think I have a perspective that just about everybody is broken in some way. We're going to be continuing to try to fix ourselves or not all of our life. You know, we're always growing. We're becoming more of who we are. Carl Rogers, a psychologist and counselor, wrote some books on this idea, you know, one's on becoming a person. That's what I believe. I mean, it's going to take a long time. And of course, there's certain, you know, mystical traditions that believe that you're not born with a soul. You have to kind of grow one, you know.
When you some realize, people have not grown that much of a soul yet.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, maybe
it's like a nub.
Hydroponic, you know, lab somewhere in your basement. But, you know, getting to that point is a lot of work. And when you take on that job, it's going to leave you a lot less time to hurt other people. It's, you know, I'm human. I make a lot of mistakes. I do the same things. I lose my temper. You know, it's sometimes I think about that, you know, people talk about being enlightened or Zen or whatever. It's like, well, you know, okay, great. Next time you hit your hammer, you know, thumb with a hammer when you're nailing something together, let me know how Zen you are about it.
Well, that's what the work is. That's what a lot of people don't understand. Cause like, I talk about that a lot, like personal development and self-work. And I had a friend ask me like, well, what does that mean? Working on yourself? Like, what does that mean? And
How about trying to be less of a, how about that?
No, you know, working on yourself happens, like you said, when you hit your hand with a hammer, when someone cuts you off, when someone's a total douchebag, you know, it's like you said, do you block them or do you engage into like an argument with them and kind of like I, you know, lower your self-esteem by engaging in this idiot. And what you're saying is that you know, kind of see, hey, does this person have a vested interest in myself or is their feedback valid? And if not, then get away from me.
That's what I do. And people will disguise it sometimes as, you know, you can't face this or you're not open to discussion. And, you know, it's like the old, it's a cliche, but you don't have to go to every fight you're invited to. You know, I believe very strongly in that. And if I engage with every single person that wants a piece of me for some reason, then I'm not going to have any time to do the things I need to do.
You're so, like, I got to let the dog out. I got to go to
and that is just going to make me sick.
It is. And I think that's really important. That's a really important point that you made, is that it's not that you're avoiding people because, you know, or not wanting to deal with them. It's just that, you know, my mom always says, if you argue with an idiot, that makes you an idiot.
That's a great saying.
You some know, people, you just don't. It's like, dude, I just don't want to talk to you. You're not worth my time. I'm not avoiding anything. I just don't want to discuss this.
Yeah, I agree, you know, and again, though, it's also that I've got a little bit of time here and working on me and helping the friends that I care for is going to be a lot more important to me in the long run than arguing and getting in things that, you know, a good friend of mine has this saying, you know, he told me this several times when I was trying to decide on whether I was going to do something or not. He said, you know, is there enough meat on the bone to really make this worthwhile? You know, or in another version of that, he says, is the squeeze worth the juice? You know, you got to ask yourself. And if it isn't worth the juice, right, you know, then why are you doing it?
Yeah, that's a really good point. That said, you were talking about you, he says that to you before you started a new project, you just started a new podcast, Stagnation.
Sure. Yeah.
Which I listened to several episodes and I loved
it. Sorry,
it'll
get better.
So. I liked it. I liked it, Matt. What made you decide to start your own podcast?
Well, a couple of things. For one thing, Disinfocast, which I was doing for a long time, I think it had a kind of niche audience, but in terms of being something that was monetarily worthwhile, you know, in terms of driving traffic to Disinfo and also emotionally worthwhile, it just wasn't there, you know. And
with Disinfo.
Yeah, the Disinfo podcast, Disinfocast, which I hosted for like, gosh, I don't know, 70, 80-ish episodes. It just wasn't there, you know. If it wasn't bringing people to the site and I wasn't paying the bill, you know, I couldn't really criticize. And again, the numbers weren't very high and the people who liked it really liked it. But, you know, aside from that, there were a lot of people that really just hated me on there. And I think it's because there was a real history with that podcast. It had been around for years and years and years and had changed hands a couple of times. And
what was the hate all about?
You know, that I'm the worst podcaster on earth, that my jokes are stupid, that I interrupt flow, I have a bad voice, that I'm too uptight. And, you know, maybe some of these are true. That's okay. But, you know, when it's not really worth the juice anymore, you know, it's okay. And I reached a decision with my boss and friend Gary over at Disinfo that, you know, we needed to do something else. I've tried video casting before. I'm not good at it. You know, I lock up in front of a camera, and especially when I'm by myself, it just freaks me the hell out. You put me with somebody else, I'm great. But, you know, just staring at that unblinking eye, you know, it just...
I think everyone is like that. It's like you're staring into, you're kind of self-conscious. And if you have that screen where there's a mini screen in the corner, you can kind of see yourself. You're just critiquing yourself the whole time, right?
Right, exactly. It's easy to get caught up in something. You know, you kind of hear yourself speak. You start thinking, what's the next thing I'm going to say? I'm trying to present this, you know, clean, focused conversation about a certain thing. But if I mess up in this line, I'm going to have to go back and take it again from the top. And I just don't like it. You know, you start looking at your face, these little micro twitches that you're making, and, you know, whether your posture's right or, you know, you hear the little things in your voice that bother you when you're in person, like that, when you're watching yourself, that may not necessarily get to you other times. You know, I can talk to you over the phone or whatever, and I'm fine with, you know, the little vocal inflections, pauses, you know, idiosyncrasies. But on video, you know, you held up to a certain standard. You're expected to be as clean and concise, as clear as the talking heads on television. You know, I'm not going to be whatever, you know, whatever your favorite broadcaster is. But there are people that are good at it. And those are the people that you should check with, you know, like the guys at Young Turks. Again, great crew over there. You know, there's Abby Martin at RT. David Seaman does a good job. Tons of people that are just great at that. It's just not my thing. So with that, I'm moving into doing a lot more original writing at the site. And, you know, there you go.
What is your goal of stagnation?
My goal with stagnation is to...
Is it just a passion project or...?
It is a passion project. You know, I say this all the time. It's like somebody will say, why did you play that crappy song at the end?
Because
I pay the bill. You know, it's my joint. You know, I'm paying the bill, so it's what I play. You know, when you start paying the bill, maybe I'll consider it then. You know, I want to use it to explore conversations with my friends and family and people that I care about or that are interesting to me. I want to, you know, those little stories, just interesting little odd things, or some of the major issues, just viewed through a more personal insight rather than, you know, a certain established narrative that one might be expected to have, you know, that. And I want to use it as a tool to improve myself. You know, I'll tell embarrassing stories about myself, or I'll call somebody. I do a thing called 5-minute therapist. Well, I'll call somebody and ask them to help me with a problem. You know, I've had Stephen Brody Stevens on there, great comedian, funny guy, as a therapist. You know, and some people might go, oh my God, out of all the people on earth, Brody Stevens is not the person you want for a therapist. But no, Brody is awesome. Brody is a guy that knows what's going on with himself and, you know, help other people. Tate Fletcher, huge jiu-jitsu teacher, former bodyguard and actor, you know, that looks like Blackbeard the pirate. But again, he's like this super sensitive, nice, very aware guy. So yeah, if I can use that to kind of just develop what I'm about, and if other people want to come along, that's great. You know, it's cool. But if I have, you know, 100 listeners that are into it or 10, that's okay. You know, so, you know, and I say this sometimes, if you don't like me, if this isn't what you want to listen to, there's plenty of other things. Go there. Go check it out.
I know.
You know?
Stop
listening. You don't have to come in my little corner, drop your pants and take a deuce. So... Which is something I've never understood.
That's a criticism I just don't understand. I have listeners that hate me and dislike me and have told
me
exactly on Twitter how much they hate me. And, you know, I had a recent criticism from someone that said they loved, you know, I had Daniele on the podcast and they said they love him, but they just hate me. The only reason I listened is because I'm a fan of his. The podcast host sucked.
Oh, yeah. That's weird. And it's okay, I guess. You know,
she was awful.
Well, here's the thing, man. You know, we're all on journeys of different sorts. And sometimes, but I'm driving this bus. And sometimes I'm going to have to let you off at a certain stop.
Well, the irony of the whole comment was that the whole podcast, Daniele was talking about how you should be a positive person and not be a douchebag in whatever religion you believe in, as long as you're a good person.
Right.
And then the person's like, you suck. So it's like, well, you're a fan of someone, yet you're doing the opposite of what he's preaching. So that
exactly, and they don't see it that way. And a lot of times, I've found that the people that are worst about that are the people that aren't trying things themselves. You know what I mean? Like the most vicious critics are the people that have never tried to do a podcast or write something or create a work of art or, you know, play music. And
well, podcasting is hard. I think a lot of
it's
people.
It's fun. Yeah.
I mean, it's fun. I love it. It's my passion. But I think a lot of people just think that you go and you talk. I mean, kind of like stand up. I know a lot of people who think stand up is really, really hard. And a lot of people think it's really easy. Like, oh, you just go up and talk. How hard can it be? It's like, no. You have to find guests, you do everything, you're not getting paid, you're doing it because you love it. And that's great, and it's wonderful, but it's not just like, and some people are not born podcast hosts, you kind of have to cultivate it, you know? There's right. a couple friends of mine, one of my friends who has a very, very popular podcast, one of the top podcasts on iTunes, and he says, if you listen to the first few, you know, 5, 6, 10 episodes, he's got like over 300 episodes now, he's like, I suck, I'm horrible, I'm awkward.
Right. You know, and I feel that way. I feel that way now. You know, I recorded a million disinfo podcasts and I don't listen to them because I just it makes me uncomfortable. And I'm still learning. I'm still learning this kind of thing. And with a podcast, you have to find your speaking voice, if you will, you know, what kind of your perspective, and you have to learn your format. You know, you have to develop format for the show and what you might think was going to work out the door isn't going to work, you know? And again,
you have really awkward guests. I'm sure you haven't had this experience yet, but I've had a couple of guests that I thought were going to be so amazing and they were not. They were awkward and weird and kind of like shy. You know, I had a guest, he was amazing, talking about everything and anything. I pressed record. He came in studio into my studio, which is my house, and I pressed record and he was just awkward and shy.
Did he breathe heavy into the mic and just
As soon as I pressed record, he turned into Mr. Awkward.
Yeah.
And then you
it changes things. Yeah.
And then you feel bad because it's like your podcast, you know, it's Stagnation or it's, you know, Out of the Box with Rosie Tran. So it's my podcast. But it's like there's nothing I could have done to make this guy open up again. He just totally was awkward.
Yeah. And again, it changes things. You know, would we have this kind of conversation right now if we weren't on microphones? And I would like to think so. You know, that's one thing I want to work on. I think that authenticity is one of the strongest things you can have, especially online, you know, and that's why I share stuff. I remember one time I got this email from some social media guru type that supposedly had my best interest at heart. And she was like, you know, you're posting all this negative stuff. You're, you know, talking about going through kind of a depression right now. And you need to stow that stuff, you know?
No!
And I was like, really? Because I kind of feel like this is where I, you know, want to connect with people. I want you to know if I'm having a hard time or, you know, that whatever or something.
Oh,
good.
I manic post all the time, Matt.
Yeah, right. And you know, I look at her Twitter feed now and
it seems fake, doesn't it? It seems super fake.
Yeah, it's 75,000 followers and it's all, you know, self supporting, kind of self promoting, you know, material to projects that she's doing. And
but it's not authentic. It's not. It's here's the thing. It's not real. Like a lot of people have told me, you know, my friends and family, that I'm a very, very positive person. But I manic tweet all the time because you're not just a positive person or you're a negative person. We're human. Right. Yeah. So we have these positive experiences and we have these negative experiences, and it's how we deal with them or we choose to deal with them or learn to deal with them that matters. But it's not going to be perfect. You're going to fall off the horse a couple times, more than a couple times. So, yeah, I am an extremely positive person, but I'm not that way because I'm constantly positive. That would be neurosis. That would be me on Xanax. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, nobody wants to hear that stuff. You know, if you're just, hey, how's it going? No, no, no. You know, it's fake. And, you know, they get enough of that already from other news sources. I like to be there for people. I can't always respond to every comment that I get, but I try to. And, you know, I like people knowing a little bit about what's going on. You know, if I'm having a hard day, you know, I'll tweet about, you know, getting my at jujitsu,
but that's helping to show like the process, and it's helping to show the growth, and
we're all people.
It's
you know?
Just like if someone is like, so I know someone who tweets and they tweet mostly positive stuff, right? They're always tweeting self-help stuff, positive stuff. And I know for a fact that this person is like super manic and has a lot of emotional problems, which is fine. But it's like they never post the real stuff. It's always 100% positive. Look at all this positive stuff that I'm posting. And if you know the person, it just seems like it makes, maybe they're posting like stuff that I can use in my life, but it's like I'm more apt to like dismiss it because it's from them, because I know how they are in real life, you know?
Yeah, you know, and again, it's like the podcast or Twitter or anything else. I want to be the same person in person that you see online. You know what I mean? I mean,
you don't want to be some fake or some weirdo.
Yeah, I don't want to be a fake. And I would rather not be a success in whatever I'm trying, or at least a perceived success, than be that. You know, it's just not me. And you know, I am who I am, and you are who you are. And you know, if you like me, that's great. You know, if I like you, that's great. But there's no reason that you should try to live up to what I expect, or vice versa.
But if you don't like us, don't listen to the podcast, and don't leave negative comments. Just go.
Yeah, I don't know if you watched. I don't know if you've ever watched a Aqua Teen Hunger Force cartoon, but there's a couple of characters on there, these aliens called the Moonanites, and there's a scene where they say, "We don't listen to people who don't like us," which I thought was, you know, hilarious. But yeah, you know, Bruce Lee said, and I'm going to paraphrase here, but he said, "You're not here to live up to my expectations, and I'm not here to live up to yours."
That is very good. That is good. Okay, so what? So give me an example. I know you didn't ask me, but since this is my podcast, I'm asking you.
Okay.
Give me an example of a 5-minute therapist. We're gonna do just this one time. I'm not stealing your idea, just because you're the guest. We're gonna do a 5-minute therapist, and then I'll ask you a 5-minute therapist, since that's your thing.
So I should ask you the question.
Both. We'll switch.
Okay. All right. Well, here's my 5-minute therapist question. Okay. Sometimes I start to feel really insecure, and I feel like I should apologize for things, and I start beating myself up. You know, it'll be something that I did, and suddenly I'll feel like this person isn't going to like me anymore. And I'll start, you know, apologizing and you know, past the point where it's reasonable. I'm just like, look, because I think I'm harder on myself than that person is. You know, the issue could have passed, but I'm going to beat myself up over for a week easy. So, you know, I'd love some advice on that.
Sounds like you have issues with self-worth because you're trying to get that validation from the person. And I think if you feel yourself needing to apologize, you should stop and look within and say, "Hey, what's going on here that I need this?" It sounds like you need that person to be like, "Hey, Matt, it's okay." You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think you're right. And that issue of self-worth has been something that's been with me all my life, absolutely all my life. And I've always felt like if people liked me, it was only a matter of time before they decided that they didn't. You know, once the facade, you know, which I think of that way unreasonably, but, you know, the facade of whatever they found that was interesting or worthwhile about me slips or cracks. So, yeah, I think you're right about that.
Yeah. So I just think stop when you feel like you're going to do it, and kind of just take a moment. Like, don't go, because that's your automatic, right? Like how some people have a temper. That's their automatic. Your automatic.
It is. And my automatic
is like, apologize. Oh, I'm so sorry. Whatever. So just kind of stop yourself and be like, why do I need, and just, you know, like meditate on it or contemplate on it or, you know, whatever you would do.
Yeah. You know, I've always felt the need to be a peacekeeper, and I get myself involved in, like, if somebody's fighting, it makes me very uncomfortable sometimes, especially if it's two people I know. And, you know, I have this whole anxiety about things falling apart. You know, I had a conversation with Duncan Trussell one time, and it never aired, but that I, you know, I always
he didn't like you, and it fell apart, Matt. That's why.
I think so. I think that's very fair. I think it's very fair.
Self-fulfilling prophecies.
I don't think that the interview went the way that Duncan thought it should, and that's okay. You know, I love Duncan, and I think he probably made the right decision. But, you know, what he said to me during the interview is like, "Stags, you know, you're so negative. Why do you constantly think things are going to fall apart?" He was like, "Well, you know." And what preceded that was a discussion about me doing what I'm doing right now, you know, working for myself. And I said, "Well, you know, it could all fall apart tomorrow." And he said, "Why? You know, have you ever considered that? What if it just keeps getting better, that it could get better?" I was like, "You know what? It's so stupid, but no, I've never considered that. My assumption has always been that things are going to fall apart, and I look for things. I feel like I look for things that are going to show me that things are falling apart. You know, people start fighting, or, you know, that somebody doesn't like me anymore, and then here goes everything. It's all going to fall apart." And I think that's part of that. You know, I grew up, the situation I grew up in was kind of dysfunctional. My mom was a drug addict. My dad drank himself to death, you know, when I was an adult, but he had a drinking problem.
I think that's just why it's like we kind of, you know, kids are so impressionable. We're literally, our brain is a sponge when you're a kid. And so the environment that's what I struggle with. So let me ask you a 5 minute and then we'll go into what you're saying.
Whatever you want to say.
let me think of my 5 minute. I had one and then I totally forgot. Okay. So let me bring up one that's like a constant issue. So I love my mom dearly, but she has an extremely different belief system than I do. She's very, very, very religious. Mm-hmm. And I'm spiritual, but I'm not religious. And she believes in a lot of dogma and a lot of, kind of superstitious religion, right?
Right.
So she's always trying to push it on me. And I feel like I make a really good compromise. Like, for example, she wanted to give me this angel necklace, right? Mm-hmm. To wear to like protect me or whatever. And I'm not into that, but I told her that I would keep it in my purse. You know, that's a compromise. I thought, I said, well, you know, I'm not going to wear it, but I'll keep it in my purse. And she just is so pushy and aggressive with it. And it's something I totally don't believe in. And I've kind of tried to tell her that and she doesn't really get it. What should I do, Matt?
That's a good question. And the first thing I would say probably is I'm the worst person to ask because I'm such a screwed up person that
that's why we're doing 5 minute therapist, Matt.
but I do that. That's why I ask people these questions. But I can say that I have had a lot of relatives that were very religious. I'm not. I do think of myself as, you know, being philosophically and spiritually open. You know, I have a lot of feelings that might be described best as pantheistic sometimes. I would say, you know, that all religion has something to offer, and that receiving a blessing or praise or whatever, you know, prayer, it doesn't necessarily isn't going to be a thing that hurts people. I would hate to say, hey, maybe you should humor her a little bit, but, you know, maybe accept it as what it is, in the sense that she wants you to be protected because she loves you and she's afraid for you. When she starts trying to interfere with your life, that she's saying, okay, you can't do these things anymore, or you have to come here, or I'm cutting you off unless you do these things, then it's time to go, okay, well, look, you've stepped this far.
She hasn't gotten to that level, but she's so aggressive with it. It's like over the top.
All right, give me an example of that, the aggressiveness.
She sends me like spiritual trinkets on a regular basis. If I don't kind of agree with what she's saying, she gets very, very, very upset and distraught. I think that she feels like she needs to defend herself, like, because my sisters are also not religious and they're a bit more cold to her. Like, I feel like I humor her the most out of the three of us. And so but it's kind of because I love her and I want her to feel accepted, but it's also a curse because then she like talks to me more about it.
Yeah. Well, I think having that honesty that, you know, and I wonder if you've had this conversation with her before, go, look, you know, I love this about you. I think it's wonderful. And I think it's great that this means something to you and you take strength from it. And I can appreciate what you're trying to say. However, you know, this is one of those things where you're just going to have to accept this about me, that these things don't mean as much to me as they do to you. It's very important to me. I don't really find the religion important, but I do find that you believe in it important and that it means something to you. And you're important to me.
That's sweet. That's good, Matt. I will try that. So you do have something to offer, Matt. You're not that messed up. Silence.
On some things. So, well, I don't fight with people when my you know, wife's grandmother says she's going to pray for me and she prays for me every day. I think it's wonderful because she's thinking about me and wants me to do well. You
know, I do think that's positive, and I've tried to kind of rework my view of it that way. So, you know what I mean? So that I can see it as more of a positive, but it's just sometimes she gets, it's like in my face about it.
Yeah, and I try to remember things that things are valuable. You know, people start talking about Jesus and I'll go, yeah, you know what? Jesus was a pretty cool guy. He had some great things to say. You know, and then I can jam on them with them for a little bit about, you know, Jesus's message in the sense, of pacifism, of helping the poor, of driving the bankers out of the temple. I think it's a great metaphorical thing, and sacrificing yourself for others, you know. But then we have to start getting into the divine thing. And OK, well, super good. Guess what? I think everybody is metaphorically a son of God. So great. Jesus is divine, too. But you know, you're not going to find out that I think this way until we start getting into it, at which point, you know, I'm going to be honest with you. This is what I feel. And if you are a person that values my time, attention, and happiness, then you're going to be able to accept that or you're not.
That was wonderful, Matt. We are learning so much from you. I'm not being sarcastic.
I'm really afraid for you. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, no. What were you going to say?
I was going to ask you about, you know, you've talked about manic tweeting. I mean, I have, you know, and one of the things I've tried to be honest about is had a lot of problems with mood and anxiety and have been on medication for it for a long time. And it's helped me a good bit. But, you know, I feel like it's a real stigma these days, you know, and I don't know if this is something you deal with, but, you know, I found a lot of times when I'm opening up about this stuff is people will freak the hell out and, you know, it's, well, that's all in your head. Well, guess what? It is. It's in my brain.
I love talking about mental health. I mean, I absolutely love talking about mental health. It's one of my favorite topics, which is why I actually just recategorized my podcast from a comedy podcast to like a general, because I'm like, I don't feel like it's comedy. I don't feel like this is comedy. Yeah. On iTunes, I changed the classification because I just talk about everything. But in general, mental health is something that I'm so passionate about. And because there's so much of a stigma and it's so silly. I don't understand the stigma. It's like there's four different levels of health. There's physical health, emotional health, mental health, and spiritual health. And it's psychologically proven and scientifically proven that you have to be healthy in all four areas to feel whole, happy, and complete.
Yeah, so, that's like Maslow's hierarchy of needs.
Yeah. So everyone has, you know, so people will go and work out at the gym and they'll say, you know I should work out at the gym. I know I should eat vegetables. I know I shouldn't, you know, eat pizza and blah, blah, blah. But when it comes to mental health, most people are like totally clueless and they don't realize that there's things that you can do, you know, personal development, it's self-help, other things, listening to podcasts. You don't necessarily have to sit in a psychologist's office or, you know, whatever. And I think a lot of people, I mean, it is good if you are at that level and you need that type of help. But I think people are just so afraid of it. It's like, you know, you ain't gonna shrink my head. It's like, no, what are you talking about? Mental health is like so important. And also your mental state controls everything else in your body, which is why sometimes people are very overweight and they try to lose weight and then they gain it back and lose it and gain it and lose it. It's because not because of what they're doing. It's because of the way they think about food and the way they think about exercise and their belief systems on food and exercise and being healthy. You know what I mean? So yeah, when people have a stigma or get weird or freeze up about mental health conversations, it's just silly to me. It just doesn't make any sense because this is something that needs to be taught. It needs to be taught in schools because I'm going to deal with people and deal with my emotions. Everyone's going to do that. Literally 100% of people that live on this earth, 7 billion people, are going to have to deal with their emotions one way or the other, whether it's positive or negative. What? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it seemed like you vanished just for a second, but it's okay.
Oh, maybe it was the Skype. Can you hear me?
Just fine.
Okay. So it's like everyone, every single person, 100% of people on Earth have to deal with their mental issues, whether they do it positively, you know, exercise or, you know, reading books or doing, you know, therapy or whatever, or negatively drinking, doing drugs, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But not everyone is going to use math. Not everyone is going to use science. Not everyone is going to do art. So I don't understand why these things aren't taught. Mental health and other things aren't taught and dealt with in schools because it's literally something that every single person has to deal with.
So, yeah. I think so because, well, we're given a one-size-fits-all example of happiness. You know, that you are going to grow up. You're going to get married. You are going to have kids. You're going to have a job and you're going to take 2 weeks of vacation. You're going to buy things and afford a bigger house. And then you're going to sit your kids out to do the same thing. And that doesn't fit for everybody. You know, industrial society and, well, any society of any size is a sick society. And, you know, when you find that you don't fit into these modern paradigms, that you may not find yourself being happy at all. You know,
and
you
who is creating these paradigms? Because
I'm saying
because 60 years ago, 100 years ago, beliefs were different, and then 100 years before that, beliefs were different. It's sure. Like things change so much. It's like if you try to fit yourself into the current paradigm, you're going to drive yourself crazy. You know, in ancient Rome, they were having homosexual sex in the bathhouses. That was totally acceptable. That was normal and acceptable.
On the samurai that said the same thing. You know, it was part of the whole like patronage system that you were expected to, you know, have gay sex with the person that was your patron.
And now it's considered completely, you know, well, some people, I don't consider it, but a lot of people consider it sick, evil. There's something wrong with you. And, you know, a couple hundred years ago, a couple thousand years ago, beliefs were different. The same thing with anything. You know, there was in ancient India, they had divine prostitution, where women were, you know, I forgot what they called them. Like, they were in charge of the temple, and they would clean the temple, and they were called, like, I think temple goddesses or temple maids or something. And they were highly regarded, and you could, if you were married, you could go to the temple and have, you know, love with the temple goddess or whatever. And it was, considered a very, very high, like, position. You know what I mean? And
right,
And now we have different views about cheating and, you know, prostitution and blah, 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 blah. But I mean, these ideas, God is not creating them. They're created by man. And so if you're trying to shove yourself a square into a round hole, it's like, that doesn't work.
Right. And I think that that's something we have to find, you know, that sometimes just because you don't fit in somewhere, it's not your problem. It's because what you're trying to fit in is not a good fit for you. You know, you can find your fit. Definitely not a one way ticket to happiness in anything that you try to pursue, but you have to find that certain mix for you. You know, I think that when it comes to mental illness and things like that, you know, that's an area, you know, we do have a lot of stigma about, like I said, and part
so you,
of it,
you, when you speak on podcasts, you felt people freeze up, or just in general, when you talk to people?
People freeze up in general. You know, sometimes we start talking about that stuff. And even though, like, a lot of people are depressed, or a lot of people have anxiety, but you mention it and they freak the hell out sometimes, you know. And I've had people tell me before that you need to go off all your medication that you're taking right now and, you know, go do A, B, and C. It's like, really? Do you know my brain? Do you know how I feel before and after? Do you know if I've tried these things before? Do you know, you know, I feel like I know my brain a little better than you do.
And did you ask them for the advice, or it was just unsolicited?
It's unsolicited. It's always unsolicited.
Anytime anyone gives unsolicited advice, you know it's not good.
Yeah, sometimes it's good. But again, is this a person that knows absolutely that this is what's right for me? Or, you know, I understand they're trying to help, but, you know. So, but yeah, this is, like I said, you had mentioned like manic tweeting or anything. So I thought it might be an interesting avenue to pursue. I don't like make, you know, mental illness like my personal, you know, cross to bear or whatever.
No, but I think it's important for people to talk about mental illness. And I think it's important for people to work on their own mental health and mental happiness, which I think a lot of people in this country and in general avoid. So that was a very, very good point. We are going to wrap up. Matt, do you have anything else you're promoting other than Stagnation and disinfo.com?
No, I don't really think I do. Just that I'd love listeners to come check out the podcast and see if it's for them. And, you know, maybe get in touch with me if you want to come on. You know, I'm always interested in speaking to people with lots of different experiences. You know, it's I have a guy coming on next week that's going to talk about embarrassing himself in front of Eric Clapton, you know? So it doesn't have to be all super serial all the time. You know, follow me on Twitter. I love talking to people. I'm at MATTSTAGGS. So, yep, that's about it.
Thank you so much for being a guest on Out of the Box. Guys, please check out outoftheboxpodcast.com and click on the donate button. We're now accepting Litecoins and Bitcoin donations. So that will help us out a lot. And this has been Out of the Box with Rosie Tran.